Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, it's Dave Player back with you on 720 WGN. So the South by Southwest event in Austin, Texas is one of the biggest music events in America, and Michael Heidemann was there all week long. He's also the executive producer of the Patty Vasquez Show and host of his own show along with Kevin Richter called Sound Sessions. Great show on the music scene in Chicago and really across the country at WGN Plus. And Michael joins us tonight. How you doing, buddy?
Dave, it's great to see you. It's great to see you again.
Great to see, as we've both been traveling this week on the road. And I said to him, if you ever seen Michael's posts online, I never know which Michael I'm going to see. Is it going to be the bearded Michael? Is it going to be the goatee Michael? Is it going to be the clean shaven?
Mm-hmm. I was half thinking to do mutton chops tonight. Mutton chops,
that's very nice. I like that.
Like a nice handlebar mustache
for you. I like that. So that was a little Fleetwood Mac. I wanted to get into the groove a little bit on AM radio and listen to some of that. But what an amazing week. Tell folks really what South by Southwest is all about.
Yeah, it was an amazing week. I mean, it was a really cool experience. And if you haven't been to South by Southwest or you don't know what it is, it's this great conglomeration of interactive music, film, comedy that all happens in Austin, Texas. It started out originally as a music festival in 1987. So this is about 30 years in.
Oh, I didn't know that. It was that old. Wow.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't really seem like it, too, because it kind of like it started off so small and it produced a lot of great indie bands coming from Austin, Texas. And now, you know, they're with sponsorship and all the years that have gone by and all the technology that's come through those gates, it's a really, really big thing. I mean, a few years ago, we've had the chairman of Lyft was the keynote speaker. This year, they had people like Joe Biden, Mark Cuban, Garth Brooks, James Franco, all there. Yeah. So it's a really cool thing because all these people merge onto this teeny town in Texas, this hipster village.
Austin's a great town. Mm-hmm. That's a great town for all kinds of stuff. Eating, drinking, music, all kinds. It's a great community. I love Austin.
Yeah, you and I should go down there sometime.
Well, let's do that. I love that. So, you know, you talk about all the different bands. There's music. It's a lot of contemporary stuff, and it's a lot of classic stuff. So, I mean, the mix of music down there is pretty wide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything that you'd ever want to see there. And the cool part is there's a lot of different stages that you'll see. So here will be the hip-hop stage over on Rainy Street. And then on 6th Street is like all punk rock and roll here happening. And then like in some of the other areas, like on the 5th Street and near in the convention center is all folk rock. So it's insane to
say. Well, how big is this? So tell me about this. So it's outdoors, it's mm-hmm. indoors, and it spans what? I mean, is it like 5 city blocks? I mean, this is a big. It's all over the place, right?
Oh yeah. So it's Austin's biggest event of the year. Yeah. So it really does span about, let's say, about 2-3 miles out.
Wow.
From the it's all centered in the convention center, which is on East Cesar Chavez Street.
Yeah.
So think I like to say it's kind of like if we had everything happening over at like the Merchandise Mart, and that was kind of like the
core. That's the home base.
The core. And Michigan Avenue would be at their 6th Street. So every single bar on Michigan Avenue would be having music blasting from it, and the streets would be closed off, and everywhere else would be just kind of involved with it. It's a really interesting concept, to be honest.
Yeah. And you got a lot of behind-the-scenes conversations, people you talked to, people you met. Talk about, besides Mick Fleetwood, which we're going to get to, talk about some of the other great people you talked to.
Well, Dave, talking to you is my favorite part so far. I mean, granted that we're not in Austin, Texas. It's good, though. But the cool thing is, it's like you go there and you don't know who you're going to bump into.
Yeah.
I was bumping into comedians that I've always loved on the streets. There's this guy named Chris Cubas.
So do you have your mic just standing by? Like, are you just ready to go, like when you're running into people?
Always. My pockets are jam-packed. Actually, Kevin Richter, my co-host on Sound Sessions, suggested I get a fanny pack for all the stuff that I've been bringing.
Yeah, I bet.
It'll go well with my dad joke. jokes, though, I'm guessing. And that's what I need to do. Like, you bring your – I have my camera strapped on my one side. I have my microphone and my recorder strapped in my my pocket. I have my chapstick ready to go. And it's just you go and you see what you're going to experience. You're able to, you know – book a few interviews in advance, but it's a matter of, you know, you just being ready and ready to go.
Think about when, you know, news media used to cover these events even 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. You would have a cameraman. You would have someone to handle the sound. You would have, you're a one-man band. Really, you are, right?
I am.
Yeah.
You can make an easy correlation to me and Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins, just like with the drum
that.
On the back.
I like that. I like that. So you're going around talking to folks. Now I saw some pictures. Did you talk to Garth Brooks? Did you have a little conversation with him?
Yeah, that was the most surprising. Well, no, Mick Fleetwood was the most surprising, of course, but meeting and getting to speak to Garth Brooks was very cool because I went there and I landed on a time where he was making a huge announcement. He's going to be combining with Amazon Music to put out his next few, albums and his next few singles. So he made the press conference there and I was able to book an interview with him. It was crazy, Dave.
But are you doing those bookings like as they're happening? Like, okay, Garth Brooks is going to be, okay, you sign yourself up in advance? Or are you just kind of hanging and ready to go jump in?
Both in every way. Like, I knew he was going to be there, so I was, you're given the, you know, a little bit behind the curtain. You're given the rundown.
Yeah.
You're given a media press list of who's going to be there. So, of course, a week before, I sent out emails to maybe 6,000 billion, 5,092 people.
You got to do that.
Yeah.
You don't ask, you don't get.
Exactly. And the worst that can say is no. So I'm very used to, you know, being told no, it's okay, it's part of the biz. But Garth Brooks was one that I saw that I'm like, no, there's no way. There's no way.
Well, and here's a guy, and I think you know this too, that I spent, you know, 14 years in the music industry back then with my ponytail and my earring. But I will tell you that I met Garth Brooks, I think it was in 93 or 94, when it was really at the height of, you know, his first albums and his popularity and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing as far as fame that has gotten to him even now. He's always been a very grounded, down-to-earth, really nice guy.
Truly.
Yeah.
Truly a great person.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because I've been hearing that from a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you think from a guy who is the number one solo-selling single artist in American's history, only being outdone by the Beatles, would be kind of like full of himself a little bit. But he was a fantastic guy. Great, came into me and immediately mentioned Champaign, Illinois. So,
is that right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's kind of cool to sit down with him in for a few minutes.
Who else? What are some of the other names?
So some of the other names, you know, we tried to get Biden. Wasn't able to.
That I would think would be a little bit of a tough one.
He was kind of busy. So, you know, coincidentally, he has something called the Moonshot Initiative, which is a cancer research fund that he's trying to produce. And in a lot of ways, getting the interview would have been a moonshot.
Would have.
So I spoke to. It was mainly about seeing music. I interviewed a lot of music artists. I mean, we had Sleigh Bells. We had the band Fastball. Got to see the band Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they played the Yvette Brothers, which is, Dave, one of my hidden gems from South by Southwest. I always had overlooked them.
Did you discover them years ago? Or
I'd heard of them because they were on some Coen Brothers albums.
Yeah.
And then seeing them live, I was blown away, which is a cool part of the discovery. Another person that I got to interview was Mr. Bill Nye, the science guy.
I know, I saw that. That was one of your first interviews of the week. And that's somebody that we all know. And he again, very enthusiastic in conversation that you can find online as well. But you were talking about some of these music artists. That's kind of like what I like what you do with Sound Sessions with Kev is – And we know at the station, the demographic is a little older. And so you bring to light some of these newer bands that we might not know a lot about. And you get deep, which I like. Yeah,
we really do. You know, I like to refer to our listeners, you know, they're seasoned. They know their music.
That's right.
When we do some on-air stuff here, we will mention names of bands and people will kind of text in and say, I don't know who these
are. Oh, there's crickets. Sometimes for me. But I like that you're like filtering in Now, you know, Garth Brooks and Mick Fleetwood. And so, you know, it's a nice mix of generational music.
Truly. And, you know, to be honest, we had an interview, you and I, together a few months ago, and you had mentioned doing some more mainstream stuff, and that has kind of been, like, burying itself in the back of my head for a little bit.
Yeah.
And getting the opportunity, I knew I was South by Southwest was going to be coming up, so I thought, why not pin down a few of those? And obviously, you know, I've been listening to Mick Fleetwood and Garth Brooks since I was a young kid with my dad. So.
Fleetwood Mac is 50 years this year.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. 50
years.
And so is Dave Pleyer. Which really sucks for everyone.
We got to celebrate one more than the other, I suppose.
We're going to have to do that, absolutely. So, and is the food part of this thing, too? Like, is that a big deal, or is that, like, not a big deal? Because sometimes when you go to these events, they spend just as much time as the food experience, or sometimes you're just eating crap as you're running along. How does the food experience out there?
Well, if you had had this conversation with me and then my stomach would probably tell a little bit different of a story.
Okay, right.
The food is immensely important in Austin,
okay,
Texas.
Okay, yeah.
They are, like, I would guess, probably the food truck capital of the world.
Ooh, so is that how you're fed?
Yeah, that's how you're fed.
Okay.
Like, out of a truck, out of a heated van sometimes.
I like that.
And
like
that. So you'd have, every single street is littered with food trucks, whether it be tacos. There's a lot of barbecue. I've been seeing, there was a lot of Venezuelan and Indian food coming from food trucks this year, which is kind of cool. But they have a food truck village. Think of it as like Grant Park for Taste of Chicago.
Yeah.
But it's all food trucks, and it's all like
indicative of the
kids.
Local cuisine there.
Local cuisine, yeah. And I'm making a petition to bring my favorite food truck. It's called Avocado Happiness.
Okay.
Avocado Happiness. Those are tough words to
say.
They were able to... Since you're at South by Southwest, there's so many promotions going on. They would say if you took a photo, they'd give you a free dish of their avocado. And it was phenomenal. So
wow.
Come to Chicago, please.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So just different ways to use the avocado. Is that what it was?
Yeah. So it'd be like, slice a little mango into it. Slice some paprika, you know. Get some...
Interesting.
Yeah, it was very cool.
So that is part of the experience. That's very cool.
Yes.
Very, very cool.
And getting me hungry,
and
actually.
And cocktails? Cocktails? Was the bar open, like, constantly there?
Dave, I'm still reeling from all the free drinks that you get, because to get into South by Southwest, you know, you need to have a badge or wristband, or you get in there as a local, and the people who have badges, you go to these parties that are like littered around the streets, and everyone is handing you free drinks. It's because Tito's Vodka and Deep Eddie Vodka
a lot of sampling going on.
A lot of sampling. But I mean, I took care of myself. I drink a lot of lemonade.
I saw you post today about, you got to hydrate yourself.
It's important.
That we're going to be talking about old fashions. We'll do that at some point.
Thank you.
Tonight as well. All right. Much more with Michael Heidemann next on 720 WGN. Fleetwood Mac, it was created by merging three songs, Lola, the unfinished song Keep Me There, and an early version of The Chain, that they all participated in a little bit of everything, and they brought three songs together to make one. I think about that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, that was kind of a thing in the late 60s, 70s, because if you think about bands like Queen, they often did that a lot with their music, is merging a few songs together. It's beautiful.
Excuse me. Stevie Nicks' Silver Springs was cut from the Rumors album at the last minute because there was not enough space on the LP. Think about that, because, you know, right, you know, now it's all digital. You could put as many songs as you want on something like that, but they literally had to look at how many grooves were left on the vinyl to actually fit it on there. So it ended up being the B-side for Go Your Own Way, and that's how it became a hit. So it wasn't on the album, but it was released during the Rumors time.
That's interesting. You know, that's another thing we touched on, the fact of how he's kind of embracing the streaming music now, because, you know, a lot of the interview focused on how he was really into the beauty of songwriting and how that kind of is kind of getting lost in today's music world.
Sure, sure. Stevie Nicks wrote Gypsy about when she and Buckingham lived together and were totally broke in the early days of their career. They slept on a single mattress on the floor and decorated with lace and a flower vase at its side. To this day, when I'm feeling cluttered, I will take my mattress off my bed, wherever it may be, and put it outside my bedroom with a table and a little lamp.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, if that works.
I mean, she was the gypsy woman, so.
She was, her cocaine habit in the 70s and 80s were so bad that she burned a hole in the cartilage of her nose.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's see here. Tango in the Night began as a Lindsey Buckingham solo album. Fleetwood Mac toured in the mid-90s without Christine, Stevie Nicks, or Lindsey Buckingham, which was kind of odd. It was kind of a dark era for the band. And they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998. So there you have it.
Yeah. What a storied history.
Yeah, right?
I mean, you know, you mentioned the fact that Fleetwood Mac often toured without them. Mick Fleetwood himself is a very solid guy. Like, he's there for the music.
Oh,
he's there. So I'm sure that, you know, when all this stuff, like, happened with the rumors and the controversy behind Fleetwood Mac, he kind of just wanted to be there for the music.
I mean,
the drummer is often the backbone of any band, and you could truly see that with him.
Absolutely. Roger, do we have a favorite Fleetwood Mac song that you would say is top of your list?
I remember listening to the Rumors album for the very first time in an apartment of a friend, and there were about five of us there one night. It was on Ridge Avenue in Evanston.
Lots of cocaine?
No.
Okay.
No. Soda pop, maybe.
Soda pop.
Okay.
I think I was home on break.
Okay.
And it was the first time I heard them, and I was swept away. Mm-hmm. And
was there
actually
song that stood out? I mean, was
and not really. I mean, from the first track on through, it just grabs you. About four or five of those songs from that album are in my shuffle mix for my exercise routine every night, because it just makes me feel good and makes me keep going.
Jess, what is the next song we're bumping in with after the news? What's the song we chose? What is it?
Everywhere.
Everywhere, okay.
It's another great one.
So give me
Rhiannon.
Give me one to play, because we need another bump.
Sarah.
Please. Okay. Sarah? I don't know if I know Sarah right off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. Jess, we're going to find Sarah. We'll play that at 3:20, bumping into the second half of Michael's interview. Sarah by Fleetwood Mac. All right. We're just rolling through the tunes. We should just play music all night.
This is AM Rock and Roll Radio, baby.
AM Rock and Roll Radio. All right, we're going to talk with Michael's going to share his conversation with Mick Fleetwood after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.
Can you hear me?
Wow. How many people just turned off the radio?
Hey.
Oh, hey, it's David Michael spinning the tunes
here
on WGN. Oh, here's Fleetwood Mac. So Michael spent the week at South by Southwest. Great music concert in Austin, Texas. And he spoke to Mick Fleetwood. So just give us a little insight into Mick, like first meeting him and stuff.
First meeting him, he was a lot taller than I thought he was going to
be. He's a tall dude, man.
He is a tall drink of water and one of the snappiest dressers I've ever seen. He's big on the vests.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
and you know, you're standing in a room with somebody you've listened to with your dad on vinyl for the last, like, you know, 20, 30 years of your life, and you're just kind of, you're in awe of this man, because he's put together some of the greatest music of all time. And to think, you know, often what happens in sound sessions when I'm interviewing these artists, it's like you took the biggest roll of the dice in your life. I mean, you took your life, your one life, to become a musician and just, you know, go on the road, and it could either be a hit or a miss. And,
yeah, very few make it. Yeah.
And very few make it. You made it. So it was. I was very much in awe of the man himself.
All right, here's Michael Heidemann's conversation, part one, with the legendary Mick Fleetwood.
Did you come? So you came from the UK to Chicago just to record the album?
Yeah, just to record the album.
What was the draw? I mean, how do you even know, like, a place like Chicago to come there? Is it just because of the blues?
Because of legend.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Chess Records was legendary to us little lads in England. We would form over, like, these albums, and someone would have, like, a 45 or maybe some weird little tape on a dictaphone, like, you know, tape version of that.
Yeah.
Someone had taped something. Oh my God, you got that? And we would have these get-togethers, and can I borrow it? And can I listen? That's how it all started. It was like a fraternity. So actually to be literally in the court of the kings with the kings was beyond belief for us, you know. And happily, Peter Green and Jeremy, and I have to say, the band, were we've been able to discover some fairly unique recordings of Fleetwood Mac, not from Chess sessions, but from the early days that were going to come with this package. We made a double album. I'm wondering as we speak about whether, I think all the outtakes have eventually been made it out into a package now. But Fleetwood Mac was really blessed, especially with Peter Green, and Jeremy covered that whole Elmore James thing so well, and John McVie is such a brilliant blues player, bass player, and this funny bunch of English lads. But listening to it, I remember, because we could have gone down in flames where it was just like these little punks from England and going like, you know, yeah, all right, well, you know, who knows what the premise was. But I know Mike Vernon knew Willie Dixon at some reasonable level, and he's such a nice guy, as it turned out. So he got a lot of fellow players to turn up. And had we not delivered something fairly worthwhile, we would have known. Two, we wouldn't be talking about this. It would have been crashed and burnt.
Hi, this is Michael with WGN Radio in Chicago. There's not much to say about our next guest. He's a living legend, drummer, and co-founder of Fleetwood Mac. I'm joined by Mick Fleetwood. Mick, how's it going today?
Oh, good. Busy at it, and happy to be here, and really happy to have attention paid to a not always very well-known part of Fleetwood Mac's initial history.
Yeah, let's speak a little bit on that. You have the new book coming out. You're releasing the book Mick Fleetwood, Love That Burns, A Chronicle of Fleetwood Mac, Volume 1. And this chronicles, you know, the years before you really came to America and before you released Rumors, even 1967 to 1974. Genesis Publications, make sure you check it out at fleetwoodmacbook.com. So what was the inspiration behind putting out this book? What's the connection?
Well, the connection actually, strangely enough, goes back a long way, way over 20 years ago, I would imagine. Is George Harrison was my ex-brother-in-law, and Genesis had worked with George, and I saw this incredible book, which they're very special the way they're put together. Not, it's high quality, the limited edition pieces of art, really. And I was so impressed with the way that they had put this gorgeous publication together. I went, oh, you know, my fantasy, oh, one day, you know. And then it sort of went off the radar. And about 2 years ago, maybe not quite as long as that, was re-reminded when I saw a book that Genesis had done with Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. And at that point, Kells, who's out there, my nephew, I was with him out shopping or whatever we were doing. I picked the book up. I said, Kells, this is that, you know, the way to do it. It's that quality. And we literally got in touch with Nick and his family, who run the company, own the company, and said, would you like to do part one of Fleetwood Mac? Because that story is really, you know, not really that well known. In which was a reason I thought he wouldn't want to do it, you know. And they honored the whole process. Then, as we were doing it, truly had no pre-thought that we're entering into the 50-year anniversary of the original band, which was from 1967, August 1967, which is just about on us for 50 years. And so it became really relevant to a moment in time that's appropriately placed to present a journey back through through the early years, you know, of the band, going up to when I introduced John and Christine, when Bob Welch left the band. I, in a way, blundered upon, but was very impressed with an impromptu listening to Stevie and Lindsay in a studio, and before Bob left, actually. And I remember the music, and it goes right up to that point where I introduce In fact, at the end here, we went back to this El Carmen, this Mexican restaurant, and it's still there.
Yeah.
And this is where we stop, and where the hopeful pickup will be is the whole story from that point on until the present day. Mm-hmm. At some point in the future, hopefully, we'll put this all totally in order.
Mm-hmm. I see that. That's phenomenal. I mean, what a conversation. It kind of changed the face of music in a way.
Yeah, I mean, as people are influenced, any player that's been in this band, you know, certainly with this book, you're really wandering into the chess mm-hmm. conversation that we were having. We were young chaps who, those were our heroes, like Rolling Stones, and we all listened to. The Stones are a blues band.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they are, really. You know, and of course they've written fantastic stuff of their own. But back then, that's exactly what we were. You know, but we got to work with people we never dreamt would ever be possible, mm-hmm. and that's all featured in this book. And really, even I forget that we did all that stuff. You know,
it's been a while.
Yeah. And so it's quite revealing, and pictures are revealing in themselves, because mostly it's a pictorial book mm-hmm. with hopefully some halfway intelligent copy about what was going on. I've been able to work with my eldest daughter, Amelia, and then Kells, my nephew. So we've had this really good family, and I mean that with Genesis as well. We've become friends, really sweet people.
Yeah, well, let's get right into that. You had mentioned Chess Records, and I was gonna, you know, when I was taking notes for this interview, I was gonna save that for the end, but I want to get right into the heart of it. You have an extremely close connection with Chicago and Chess Records.
Yeah.
How did this come to be? I mean, what was it like in those days being in Chicago at Chess Records and during the peak of it?
Well, if not at the peak, it was still very active. Mm-hmm. It was simply beyond any dream we could have ever had. And Mike Vernon, who headed up our record company, Blue Horizon, to his credit, put that all together. And the main reason I think it all came together was with the help and the focus of Willie Dixon, mm-hmm. the famous writer and bass player and really the king of Chicago in many ways. Not only was a huge, impressive human being, just 6'5", I mean, just, and he was so helpful, and he had recorded there, obviously, spent many sessions there, and he helped put all these fantastic, Buddy Guy was there, and Shaky Horton, J.T. Brown, Elmore James's sax player, and we really were we emulated Elmore James, so for us it was like, oh my god, I mean, Elmore was passed away by then, but
yeah.
Playing, and that's all on those, it's Blues Jam at Chess, we made a record there, and full credit to Mike Vernon, who's featured in this book too, in terms mm-hmm. of talking about what was going on, and there's people like that were pioneers in England, bringing American blues, which is basically, at that point, in many ways, was a forgotten art form mm-hmm. here. The irony of it was pitiful. Go and a lot of the guys would come to Europe, and we'd be such reverence for their music, and these are guys that couldn't even use a toilet properly in the United States back in the day. It's just like the irony of so many things turned around, mm-hmm. and looking back and what's come. Not that we were sitting there being politically active, but the truth is that through our love for the music, it was worth a damn what actually happened, mm-hmm. which was seeing the read on what we actually did with our music actually did have an effect on people appreciating blues, you know, and it just took these funny bunch of, ostensibly a lot of crazy English dudes, mostly lads, that loved American blues, that then took that back, we call it Coles to Newcastle. She's taking something where a lot of people, when we first started touring in the States, was simply not aware, especially young people, of anything. They thought it was just like a new art form coming from England. And at that point, we were literally emulating and copying and playing a lot of the original songs which came out, that were recorded at that studio, and of course other places all over the States. So the very ironic triggering of that type of dynamic of what happened in the world of Fleetwood Mac. But that studio, it was mind-blowing for us to be in Chicago, in the Court of the Kings, for us.
I love that he was literally, as soon as he knew you were from Chicago, those memories. I mean, you could have been talking about anything about his career, but Chicago became such a forefront in his mind.
Oh, absolutely. Before the interview even started, I walked into the room and it was this beautiful Four Seasons suite. And it was him, his son, and his manager, and the book people. And they came up to me and looked at me and they said, this guy's from WGN Radio in Chicago. And he goes, oh, Chicago. Yeah, Chess Records. This was
what came to mind.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, I became from an interview guy just from the streets to, we need to speak to this guy and let the Chicago audience know that they were influential into Fleetwood Mac's history.
You do a fabulous job. I feel the same. But what sells the interviews and when you people hear is WGN.
Yes,
It does. These the most powerful letters, and you know, I think I have that. I always post that every so often. The most respected letters in broadcasting. It does help in the process because people listen to that when they come into town. But for someone not to say pizza, hot dogs, Al Capone, or shootings, and just immediately says Chess Records. Oh yeah, Chess Records is where it's all at. And you know, and to know that this was such a hub of the music scene. And here's the other thing. I know there's a foundation, a blues foundation that is in the Chess Records building. And I know former WGN radio host Bob Surratt did something in Cranes recently about Chess Records and talked about the fact that, you know, why not turn that into a museum? Because there's blues museums in St. Louis.
Right? Yes.
And I'm trying to think, there's another blues museum, maybe it's in Memphis or somewhere, but there's no, you know, we have such a massive blues presence in Chicago. And there's even, we talked about a few weeks ago, there's a hardware store, an Ace Hardware store that's closing. And the owner's concerned about it because it was an old blues club. And when you go to his storage room, there's these blues murals on the wall that literally just stacked rakes and lawnmowers and whatever in front of for years. But it's this iconic blues club that every blues artist who was anybody came and performed at. It's a hardware store now.
Wow.
And he's trying to figure out how to save that. So the history here is so important, not only, again, for the history of blues, but the history of rock and roll. I hope that building becomes something of an icon like Sun Records.
Same. There is no denying Chicago's influence on the blues music scene. And the thing that I didn't realize is that Chicago's blues music is even bigger in England. Like, people from England know Chicago as the blues capital of the world. Like, in Chicago, we're so blessed with, you know, getting all these music venues from the Metro to the House of Blues to everything that we often overlook.
The
history of the blues. So it's kind of cool.
Well, we're going to do part two with Michael's interview with Mick Fleetwood after the news. Next on 720 WGN. All right, we're back with Michael Heidemann from, I don't even know what to say, executive producer Patty Vasquez, Sound Sessions. You're all over the place, my friend.
Well, thank you, Dave, yeah.
And great interview with Mick Fleetwood. You were at South by Southwest. And what are we going to hear in this next segment?
So we're going to be hearing a lot more about Chicago. I mean, I kept trying to skew it out to some of the later years at Fleetwood Mac. But, you know, the book that he's putting out, Love That Burns, chronicles 1967 to 74, right before they came to America, before Stevie and Lindsay even got into the band. So he wanted to focus a lot on what the city brought to the album and brought to him as a musician. So it kind of focuses on that.
All right, let's take a listen.
So we're speaking with Mick Fleetwood. Let's take it back to Chicago now, again, one more time. Blues is in our blood in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
You were there recording in the 60s and 70s. What was it like in Chicago in the 60s and 70s, and where did you go to hang out? I mean, what were the streets like back then?
Well, when we came to America, incorrectly, but we were so excited because of all the music, but the people go like, you got to be really careful, you can't go down there, you know, you're white, you don't go there. Mm-hmm. Well, and it was probably for sure true, you could have got into a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. When we went to Chicago, which was part of the Willie Dixon, you know, the dude was just amazing. Mm-hmm. We were chaperoned, mm-hmm. you know, and he took Peter out. I actually wasn't there that night, but he took Peter out definitely to a place where no white folks would go.
Yeah.
Period. But with Willie Dixon, it was a different story. And that's where Peter played the night away with Willie Dixon and his friends. And so we weren't really, but I think that the backdrop would be that certainly in the world that we wanted to know about, you know, you weren't probably advised to be hanging out in the places that we got to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality of that was that it, in a way, wasn't real, you know. It was protected or just it was made okay. We as young English lads very unfairly, I think, oh, don't go out in the street in New York, you're going to get mugged. I go like, what?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of fear.
A lot of fear.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is part of the world we're tending to live in now, which is not a good thing. Because it's never as bad as people, you know.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, come on. And so we had a great experience, and America has been nothing but great for this band, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhat ironically, a lot of people think Fleetwood Mac is an American band now. For good reason.
They do, yeah.
But, you know, it's like we've lived here so long, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of young people who go, oh, wouldn't even maybe put two and two together, but... So now we're truly sort of, whatever the word is, from England and half American.
Mm-hmm.
But this is our home, and it's been a great place to be. And, but back then we were just passing through and going back. It was like coming back, having visited, you know, Father Christmas up in Greenland, you know. Coming back with all this experience.
Right.
Not really believing it all happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put the album together, and I still look at that album and go like, as with parts of this book, but you go like, God. And we're really, really lucky that that all happened. And mostly it's an unknown story, so I hope some of that, for the history of a band that I've been in and all these lovely people that have been in Fleetwood Mac and still are in Fleetwood Mac, especially this book is it's not all written in yet, but my intro is going to be in there shortly. This is just a beginnings of what it's sort of going to be like.
It's a beautiful book too.
It is. It's already beautiful, but the kudos I'm making very sure that people. It's not about me. I'm just a funny presenter of, but Peter Green. Started this band,
mm-hmm.
and I want people to know that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And he's our mentor, and he he needs that. He doesn't need anything, but I need to know that that's been done.
Yeah.
The kudos to that funny little band that started up.
I love it. You know, it must feel really good to look back at this book and all the hard work you put in. I mean, being in a band is like a family and a business at the same time.
Yeah, and sometimes a nightmare.
But it's all worth it in the end, right?
Well, hence the title. It's one of Peter's songs that he used to sing, and if you ever hear it, you'll get it. Mm-hmm. It's heartbreaking and soulful, and it just struck me as, you know, that whole like the love affair, but it's the love that you know, it's love for sure, but a lot of it, you know, especially when you lose that situation, it hurts so bad, you know.
Yeah.
And part of that, there have been people that have not come out of the story of Fleetwood Mac in one piece, including Peter.
Yeah.
For some reason. And that would be love that burns, you know, and the flame is still going, you know.
Truly, truly a genuine title from such a genuine guy. That's The Love That Burns. You can pick up the book at FleetwoodMacBook.com. Mick, I could talk to you all day. I do get to ask you one.
We'll have to do the rest of it in Chicago.
Oh, absolutely. come by WGN anytime you want. Yeah. We'll get you in studio. We'll hang out. And then you and me can be part investors in Chess Records.
There you go.
So I got to ask you before I go. I spoke to my dad. He's a big Fleetwood Mac fan.
Oh, yeah?
And I remember when I was young, we both sat down together and he goes, "You need to see this band." And we watched Tusk together when you had the USC marching band
on
the DVD. Yeah. And he wanted to know, you know, what was the idea behind that, the concept? Who came up with that, and how awesome was it when you saw that band come out and everyone just lose their
it's
mind?
It's always awesome. And not that recent. Well, actually, fairly recently, I did that drum off thing with that movie star. What was his name? With the guy from the Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah.
It's a famous movie star. There's this drum battle thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I went and did that and had the USC marching band come on so I'd win the competition. You know, we were shredded.
That's one way to do it.
That was a lot of... with Dr. Bartner, their musical director. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun. In brief form, we were in the middle of making an album and we had a break. I went... my father at that point had fairly recently passed away, and Mum was with my sister in France. My sister had a place up in Normandy. So I went, mm-hmm, and to be with Mum and just hang out for a bit. And while I was there, the first night, I drank myself into a stupor, and in the morning, I'd go like, "What the hell's that?" It was a brass band going around the village, it was Saturday, and they kept going around.
Mm-hmm.
And about 20 minutes later, they come and get louder, and it would be right outside my window.
Ooh.
And I had such a bad hangover, and going, "Oh man!" And I couldn't sleep, so I went, "Okay," I just started drinking again, sat out on the balcony, and I thought, "How cool is that?" It was like the Pied Piper, that kids were joining in, and people in wheelchairs being wheeled around, and old sailors in the front that drank too much and their legs were falling off or whatever. And that's where I just got this funny idea, because Lindsay had recorded part of the track, and it sort of, from my recollect, had been pretty much relegated to the dustbin. And while I was away, I got this idea: what if we put this massive marching band up playing that riff? Because it sounds like a carnival thing, you know.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. Tick-a-tack-a. And anyhow, that's where I got the idea. So one time, for sure, it paid off getting drunk. and it's been a legendary song, actually. And then I came with this idea to record it in Dodger Stadium. Everyone thought I was insane, which I was. I said, well, we're going to do it. And then Ron Say, the Penguin, known as the Penguin, because John McVie has a penguin tattooed on his arm, and that used to be our emblem as a penguin. And one of our office secretaries knew Ron Say, and she said, I'll get Dodger Stadium for nothing, and we did, and it became the. We bussed all the band in. We had like 200 musicians and recorded that song in Dodger Stadium. And I played the Tusk many times out in the field there with the boys and the girls. So that's how that happened. Just came together with a crazy idea that, in a way, paid off. And that was my contribution to that song that Lindsay wrote.
Mm-hmm. What a beautiful story. Truly one of, you know... The music that you write really just reflects a lot of my own experiences in life.
Me too, for a lot of other people's music, like the stuff we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful medium, and then there are others, as we know, and certainly in many ways, for, you know, slightly obvious reasons, music pretty much, you know, has a grip on being at the top of the bill for infiltrating people's psyche and memory triggers and stuff. It's pretty true that mostly does. Occasionally there'll be major parts of history which, of course, aren't always good, and sometimes they are, and people remember those things. But music has this pervasive, long-term... The outcome is that you pretty much say, well, music seems to just be this backdrop very often to people's lives. It just is. And, you know, a great book can do the same thing, but the reality is, I think I'm correct in saying, it's not as pervasive as music has been throughout all time. It's been the messenger of people's feelings and troubadouring into people's lives and becoming part of a fabric, really. And they all own different memories that you trigger. Mm-hmm. And I could sit with, you know, it's great sitting here with you, and I'm never bored with hearing. We do forget that part. You know, imagine how the Beatles, you know, and Bob Dylan, who really sit there and have social commentary that's affected huge, profound statements. We've never been a band that does that, but we still have. It's other people's memories becomes their interpretation of what you've triggered, and it's all meaningful. Mm-hmm. You know. So it's been a great journey.
It's been a great journey. It's been a great time talking to you. I'm really looking forward to when you come over to Chicago and hang out.
Amen.
Mick, thanks again for joining us at the WGN.
Ooh, nice closer, Michael. I like that. Very cool. So, again, if you want to listen to the whole interview, we'll podcast it on my page, but you also go to Sound Sessions. Michael posted it on Friday for the entire interview with Mick Fleetwood. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Dave, thank you so much.
Nice job. Nice job on the interview.
Thank you very much.